Also like to congratulate you and congratulate all the Muslims on the occasion of the birth of his grandson Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq. This is the occasion of his birth as well, the commemoration of his birth, and the 33rd annual anniversary of the victory of the blessed Islamic revolution in Iran under the leadership of the grandson of the Prophet Imam Khomeini. May peace be upon his soul. This beloved Prophet, this great leader, I mean here the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, he was able to create a great ummah and a great civilization. However, how did he do this? He began and was sent and practiced jihad in the Arab Peninsula, the Arabian Peninsula. He created this within an atmosphere of people who suffered from ignorance, people who worshipped statues, people who were ignorant, people who were divided, people who were stubborn amidst tribal rivalries and family rivalries, internal divisions, internal fighting. This was the situation. There was no unity, no religion to unite, no cause to unite, no leadership, no project, no culture. From nothing he created this civilization, without anything being there. From a very, very negative reality, a negative situation, intellectually, culturally, humanitarianly, he was able to create from this the only, the father believed in his daughter only because she was a woman, but from this situation the Prophet was able to create an ummah. This was the miracle. An ummah which believed, an ummah which had culture, ethics, values, a civilization. An ummah which was able also to enter history from the big gate. Just within a few decades it was able to enter history. An ummah which had and still does have its history, its present, it still has its influence in the world, past, present and the future. It will always have an influence. One man became today an ummah. An ummah which is more than 1 billion, 2 million Muslims. All of them say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, there is only one God and Muhammad is his prophet. May peace be upon him. And the miracle, the great miracle of the Prophet, and he was able to bring about the Ummah with this miracle, and he was able to bring about this transformation, this miracle which we can resort to, and we can set an example from this miracle, we can set an example for our life in order to save the Ummah once again, to awaken the Ummah once again, for the Ummah to be on its own two feet once again, to bring about the intellectual and the transformation of faith, the spiritual, educational, cultural transformation in the Ummah. This miracle is God's book which was sent to the heart of Muhammad, may peace be upon him, the Holy Quran. This Quran is the miracle, the immortal miracle, the miracle in itself, with its language and with its content. As we say in these days, in its form and in its content, it was sent to the heart of an illiterate prophet in the midst of a very ignorant ummah at that time. The miracle of this Quran was that it continued throughout this period, throughout these decades, throughout these centuries, it continued to confront the challenges. Who could bring about something similar to the Quran? No one was able to bring about something similar to the Quran. And the Prophet was the Prophet of challenges. This book was the book of challenges. It challenged in its content, in its language on all arenas. And this miracle continues until today. Today as well, this Quran, we hear the verses of this Quran, and the verses of the Quran speak to everyone in the world. In this period of time as well, in this period after centuries where we witnessed developments, a lot of technological, educational, philosophical, civilization miracles as well, and developments, the whole world, the intellectuals, the philosophers, everyone, all people of education in this world, they all gather. But let them come and bring about something which is similar to the Quran. This challenge still exists today. Who can bring about something similar to the Quran? Another miracle, another holy, godly miracle, is how this Quran was written, its verses, its letters, the words. It is complete. We cannot, of course, nobody can speak about anything incomplete in this Quran. And everybody tried to speak about, of course, someone adding or taking away parts of the Quran. There were all these motives which existed in the Islamic arena and outside the Islamic arena as well. However, after 1,400 years, to reach this generation, to our current present generation, this Holy Quran, which we have today in our hands, which is still preserved from any additions and from any falsifications. Isn't this a miracle for the Quran to stay as is for 1,400 years? We sent the memory and we continue to preserve this memory. This is a promise of God, and God does not abandon His promise. And the main focus of this Quran and the religion which the Prophet brought about, my dear brothers and sisters, is the call for unity, the call for being united amongst one another, to unite to one God, one Creator, and to be, for there to be unity between the people, those who believe in one Creator, one God, who are united in the fact that they are the creations of God. The people are two kinds of people, either brothers in religion or people who are similar to you in being a creation of God. This is how our religion speaks to us. And so from here, I will begin to speak about the first part of my speech tonight, which I will refer to in brief, so I leave more time to other issues. For beginning, I'd like to speak about Islamic unity, the project of Islamic unity. However, in this period of time, whereby we are witnessing a lot of attempts to bring about divisions, where we are witnessing a lot of hardships, I'd like to point your attention to the following. I speak here to the political leaders, to the religious scholars, to the intellectuals, to the people in general, to everyone who is cautious and intent on the truth and intent on their people, on their ummah, who care for their current lifetime and the aftermath. At this time, more than ever before, we must pay attention to the following, to investigate the facts and the information. This is an introduction which is indispensable before I go into the essence of what I want to speak about. Today, unfortunately, we've reached a situation whereby everything which is said on the media, we must not build upon it. We must go and investigate and certify if these facts are true or not. Today, especially this year and over the past few years, we have been witnessing a very strange period, which is probably unprecedented in history. Very clearly, they quote intellectuals, they quote politicians, they quote people, and at the same time, these people haven't made these stances, and then they build their own positions and stances of enmity based upon these. However, at the beginning, this is all not true. They create events, they create facts, they fabricate facts, and they want to take stances based upon these fabricated facts, which are not true. Events which haven't happened, and facts which are not true, fabricated facts, fabrications which were made. This is happening today. Every time, every hour, every minute, And if someone wants to sit down and to deny these stances, to deny what has been said, will be preoccupied. All we'll do is just make statements of denial. So I'd like to give some examples here. My dear brothers and sisters, the human being must be cautious how to build his stance. When one wants to build his stance, he must make sure the facts are true, must make sure the information is true. We must not be taken into the atmosphere of fabrications, of allegations, of lies, rumors. And all of this is being used today. And the biggest public opinion institutions are being used. This is the most dangerous part of a war which could be waged, the most important events which could be fabricated. So keep this in mind, and as I go through my speech, we will focus on them. When we speak about the issue of Islamic unity, of course, this is a project which many people have spoken of for hundreds of years. And even before the victory of Islamic Revolution in Iran, before Imam Khomeini, there were a lot of symbols and a lot of intellectuals, Sunni and Shia, who worked on the project of Islamic unity, and they built institutions for this purpose. However, what is undoubtful is that the victory of Islamic Revolution in Iran under leadership of Imam Khomeini in 1979 and the establishment of a state with the importance and the strength of the Islamic Republic and the adoption of this leadership of Islamic Republic, the adoption of this slogan and the efforts which were pursued by Iran on the level of its institutions, of the media, the intellectuals, the conferences which were held, this gave a huge push for the sake of the Islamic unity, the project of Islamic unity. And we never aimed, when we speak about Islamic unity, we never aimed to take away or to bring about one specific Islamic sect, or for all Muslims who worship different sects. We didn't want them to be one, to worship one sect. No, this is not our aim. Meaning, there are different Islamic sects in Islam. However, what is well known is Sunni and Shia. However, nobody before Imam Khomeini or during the time of Imam Khomeini or after his death, nobody said that unity means Sunnis become Shia or Shias become Sunni. This is not a slogan which has been raised. We are not raising this. If somebody is saying this, this is not true. This and maybe aims only to create incitement. It's not true at all. The project of Islamic unity from the very beginning, during the time of the Imam and after the Imam, this project means that the Muslims, the politics and the leaders and the colonial powers previously, they worked to rip apart the Muslims, to create distance amongst the Muslims. They worked also to incite the Muslims against one another. They also worked to promote conflicts amongst the Muslims. So what was focused on is for the Muslims to approach one another, to get to know one another, to speak to one another, to look for the commons with one another, to look for their higher interest in the Ummah, and to love one another, and to put aside differences, and to cooperate for the sake of these great goals and for the higher interests. This is what we mean by Islamic unity. Nothing else. We don't want anyone to make concessions when it comes to the ideological religious issues, because there are differences in that perspective, and it's not required for anyone to abandon or to make any concessions when it comes to Islamic fiqh or Islamic ideology, thinking. And any sane person will tell you, yes, this is the interest of the Muslims, this is the interest of the people and the Ummah. It's the interest also of the Muslims, it's the interest of the Christians as well who live here in the East. It's in their interest for there to be brotherly relations, people to know one another, to cooperate with one another, Muslims to cooperate, Muslims who follow the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. Of course, the arrogant powers, the colonial powers, the occupying powers, and also those who want to present themselves as the pharaohs or the rulers, many of those people have no interests for unity amongst the ummah, for unity amongst the ummah, for cooperation amongst the ummah. They believe in divide and conquer, and so they won't allow for unity. Why? Because, let's speak about now in modern times, the control of oil and gas and the control of sanctities, because this occupation is not only Israeli occupation, it's American-Israeli occupation. And were it not for America and the West, Israel would not have been able to remain, to continue to exist. So the controlling of sanctities and decisions, this is all related to what? It's related for this ummah to be ripped apart, to be divided. This is how they preserve their control. So this is a very important part of any arrogant powers project. When our people, the people of our ummah, awaken and they call for unity, and when they call for cooperation and cohesion, when they call for putting all conflicts aside, this means that the ummah has begun to walk on the path of regaining its decision-making, regaining its sovereignty, its independence, its riches, its oil, its markets, its future. And the arrogant powers and the huge corporations which control the political decision-making won't allow for this. Over the past few decades, we witnessed events. Of course, they all pushed for this ummah to cooperate. And they have something which brings them together, even when they are targeted, when they confront the threats. We witness a lot of dangerous events to prevent any cohesion or cooperation amongst the ummah. And as we're speaking at the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, I'll begin with this slogan, with this example, the war which was waged on the Islamic Republic. What was the guilt of Iran? The guilt of Iran was that it overthrew the regime of the Shah, who was an agent of America and of Israel. And by the way, on the level of sectarianism, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi was a Shia. And America adopted this Shia king, and he used to go to Mashhad of Imam Ruda, and he used to portray himself as someone who visited the Imam Ruda shrine and read Quran. America and Israel and the Arab moderates, they all supported this Shah, and he was a Shia person. Why? Because for America, it's not about a sectarian person, it's not about sectarianism, it's not about the sect which a leader belongs to, it's about his political orientation, his political stance and his position. The guilt of this imam and the people and the revolution is that it overthrew the agent of America and Israel and brought about a balance to the ummah after Egypt exited during Camp David. After this, a war was waged. The war on Iran continued for 8 years. The war was supported by America, which was supported by some Arabs and internationally as well. It was supported. Most of the Arab countries supported this war. And some Arab countries, the rich countries, they spent hundreds of billions of dollars for this war. These billions of dollars which were denied for the Palestinians inside Palestine, Palestinians who were suffering from hunger, and Palestinians outside who are living in refugee camps in the worst circumstances. And this money, which were denied and forbidden to the Palestinian factions who want to retrieve their sanctities and their territories, but these hundreds of billions of dollars were spent to finance a war against an Islamic country, a young Islamic country, which raised the slogan of Palestine and marching towards Jerusalem al-Quds. And there were very dangerous repercussions of this war when it comes to unity amongst the people of the ummah. After the failure of the war, and after the wishes of overthrowing the Islamic Republic, overthrowing this regime, after these wishes went with the wind, then they resorted to the other plan. How can they prevent unity amongst the Muslims? Although what unites the Muslims, as I said, on the level of the intellectual level, religious level, ethical level, what unites them is a lot. And what unites them politically, when it comes to the political challenges, is also a lot. All of our people in the region, all of our Islamic people want dignity, they want independence, they want regimes which are based on the will of the people, they want to control, they want to use their capabilities, their energy, their gas, their oil, for the sake of the people who have a very high percentage of ignorance and poverty and diseases, etc., etc. And this ummah has Palestine as well, and the sanctities of Palestine which have been stolen and under occupation. And every day, insults are made against the ummah of 1 billion, 200 million Muslims. However, regardless, there are efforts being pursued so that these people don't unite, so that Muslims don't unite. After the war, they resorted to another type of war, which is more dangerous, even worse. It is the issue of sectarian sedition. They spoke about the so-called Iranian expansionism and Shia expansionism. And here I'd like to speak about some numbers, some statistics, because today they're working on this. In all countries, in all Arab countries, in the Arab media, on the internet, and now this is the main subject of the soft war which is being pursued by America and the West in confronting this ummah. What is the idea? What are they doing? They are saying that Iran, and here I'll quote what was said, or I'll speak about what was said by Sayyid Khamenei last Friday. They say that Iran, the accusation is, of course, the accusation is for Iran, and Hezbollah is also part of it. They say that Iran is trying to expand Shiism in the Islamic world. Iran wants to make the Sunnis Shias, convert the Sunnis into Shia in the Islamic world. Look at this. How many Shia do we have in the world? How many Sunnis do we have? We don't have any clear statistics. However, how many Shia do we have? 10%, 15%, 20%? How much? How many Shia? And Iran is part of the Shia. Iran, as a country, they say Iran wants to convert the Sunnis into Shiites. We have at least 1 billion. Iran wants to convert them to Shiism. So come, the Sunni religious scholars, the Sunni governments, be careful, and they announce the war and be on the defense, because there is a danger coming, which is Shia expansionism. This is the work of the devil, the work of the devil, not based on any truth, any facts. Now, the issue of Iranian expansionism and politics, I'll speak about it before. I'll speak about it later, but let me speak about now the religious perspective about Iranian expansionism, Shia expansionism. This is not true at all, but some people are promoting this idea, yes. And today I have to speak about some details. For example, in Egypt, I met with some high-ranking figures who believe, they say that there is a project of Shiism in Egypt, and Iran is leading this process, and Hezbollah has something to do with this movement. And until now, 5 million people in Egypt have converted to Shiaism. Believe it, 5 million have converted to Shiaism in Egypt. I told them, please tell me where they are. Where are they? So we can contact them. Contact them. If they're not at 5 million, 3 million, 1 million, 500,000, 200,000, 50,000, 10,000, tell me, where are they? That's what I responded. That's what I said. Give me a list of their names. This is one example. And so for this reason, yes, there are a lot of religious scholars in Egypt whom we respect. However, as a result of the false information, and because they didn't certify or investigate this information, they say we want to confront Shia expansionism in Egypt. But where is this Shia expansionism? How could it, can Iran move? Who is anyone capable of bringing about such Shia expansionism in Egypt? The other more hilarious example, more funny example, is in Syria. And of course, I'm not getting my information from the internet. I'm someone who knows. I know high-ranking religious scholars in the Sunni and Arab world. I know high-ranking officials and figures, and I meet them with them, and that's my honor. And they meet as well with me and with my colleagues, maybe because of the Muqawama and its special situation. Some of them really discussed with me in detail, and they said that in Syria there is a project of converting to Shia, and the regime of Bashar Assad is accused that it supports this project of expanding the Shia, and until now in Shia 6 million have converted to Shia, to the Shia sect. Imagine, I'm far away from Egypt, but Syria, we're very close. We're one people in two countries, as some say. People know one another, the families know, people come and go. So don't we know what's going on in Syria? 6 million? Where are these 6 million Shia in Syria? And actually, one of the advisors of one of the Arab kings spoke to me about this and told me that there are some kings and princes, Arab kings and princes, and they were given reports and they said, please hurry up and save the Sunnis in Syria because there is a project of Shiism in Syria, and until now 6 million have converted to Shia, to the Shia sect. I went to Damascus at that time before, years ago, and I met with the officials, and I even met with security officials, and I asked, requested, and if he listens to me, this security official will know, can you make a study to see where are these 6 million? Because some people are convinced that there are 6 million. Tell me, where are they? Let me get to know them. Where are they? There is not 6 million, nor is there 5 million. There is not even 1 million, not even 500,000, not 100,000, not 1,000. For 33 years, not even 500. There are some individuals, and this happens anywhere. There are some Sunnis who have converted to Shiaism, some Shia have converted to the Sunni sect. Today we have the media, internet, books, and people are affected by the events, but there is no Shia expansionism, nor Sunni expansionism. Even here in Lebanon, if we want to, of course, although this continued for a few months and it stopped, unfortunately there is some political enmity which promoted this, and they said that Hezbollah is trying to convert people to the Shia sect in Aqqar and in Duniyyah here in Lebanon. This is silly. Where do we have this? However, you and me, we are saying it's silly, but there are some high-ranking politicians in the Islamic and Arab world, there are some religious, high-ranking religious figures who are convinced this is happening. To the extent whereby one of the religious figures, high-ranking religious figures, was giving a report, and he believed the content of this report, which said that for 33 years, ever since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, during this period, 50 million Sunnis have converted to Shia. This is something really funny. Where are these 50 million Sunnis who converted to Shia? I don't want to continue more than this, but I want to tell you they are working on this project. And I'd like to tell you today, on the anniversary of the birth of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, we are Muslims, Shia, for Ali ibn Abi Talib, may peace be upon him. We are the students of Imam Ja'far, son of Muhammad, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, may peace be upon him as well. These are the days of his birth too. We believe that the students of the Islamic sects, the other Islamic sects, we believe all of them are Muslims. We believe they are Muslims, and we share with them a lot, and all Muslims have freedom in being part of the sect they want. And we, as Imam Khamenei said on Friday, nobody, none of us has a project of calling for converting to Shiaism or converting Sunnis into Shia. Not 1 billion. We don't have any project to convert one Sunni into a Shia. This is not our program, nor is our goal, nor are we working for this at all. Very clearly, maybe we might find amongst the Shia, we might have some institutions or one figure who has such a project, but this is not the project of the Islamic Republic, not of Imam Khomeini or Imam Khamenei. This is not the project of Hezbollah. The same goes in the Sunni world. Some are working on this. However, nobody can say or accuse one a Sunni religious leader or Sunni religious movements or Sunni religious institutions and say that it's their project to convert the Shia into Sunnis. No. And so I wish and I sincerely hope that in this perspective we can reach a decisive stage. And I hope that none of us will allow, especially amongst the Sunni colleagues, I hope that none of them amongst the Sunni colleagues, I hope that none of them will allow for anyone to plant a lie or to plant sedition or divisions of this type. I'd like to tell you as well, in our military training camps, a lot of our Palestinian resistance fighters have trained. I used to tell the Palestinian sides and to tell our people in the training camps, I told them that you train our Palestinians, you train them militarily in resistance. When it comes to ideology and religion, leave them for their own religion. They bring their own religious scholars. I even forbidden any discussions about religion, about sects, about ideology, because we want to open any door for any suspicions. Also here, let me take advantage of the occasion of Islamic unity to speak about national unity. I'd like to say something here very frankly. In Lebanon, we believe and we realize that we are in a country of diversity, of pluralism. Some people spoke about diversity, but they didn't speak about pluralism. We are a diverse country, a country of plurality, whatever you want. And when I am an Islamic, or when I am a Muslim, and an Islamic person, when it comes to my affiliation, and a student of a Prophet Muhammad, and here I speak to the Christians, this doesn't mean I don't have a political choice except to establish an Islamic Republic in Lebanon. Either an Islamic Republic or chaos. No. The greatness, one reason or one of the great issue parts of Islam as a religion, as an ideology, is that any Muslim group in a country, any Muslim group has the appropriate guidance. There are no doors which are closed. And so we, as an Islamic movement in Lebanon, and we are proud of our Islamic and our religious affiliation, when we speak about cooperation, national cooperation between Muslims and Christians, and when we speak about the necessity of building a national country in Lebanon whereby all are partners, whereby all participate, whereby all are represented, whereby all people's interests are served, whereby all are protected, whereby security and stability and dignity are for everyone, we're not just speaking politically. We base our talk here on our religious thought too. This is not political tactics. And so our religious scholars over the past, our religious scholars ever since Abd al-Hussein Sharif al-Din to Muhammad Mohsen al-Amin, I'll speak here on the level of Lebanon, until Imam Musa al-Sadr, may God bring him back to us, to Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah and Muhammad Mehdi Shamsuddin, Sheikh Muhammad Mehdi Shamsuddin, may peace be upon all their souls, to all of our religious figures today. We, Hezbollah, the Islamic movement, do we participate in parliamentary elections? Would we participate if there is no religious law which allows us to do this? I'm someone who's religious. Would we participate in a government if religion doesn't allow for us to participate in a government? And this is something which is related to Hezbollah or politics. This is something related to our religious scholars. So this is a religious choice. And so here there is a point. Let me be very clear in this point. Our religious orientation to Muslim or Christianity, this is not an obstacle which prevents us from building a country, prevents our society, our community, from being one community which cooperates, a community of friendship. No. This is not an obstacle. And this is based on religion and faith. Now, there are some to continue with their incitement. They don't want people to gather and cooperate with one another. They want to continue with the enmity between Sunni and Shia, and between Muslims and Christians, and always create fear in the Christians' hearts towards Muslims. They remember the stances of 1982 and 1983, when they heard of establishing an Islamic Republic. Yes, it's true, in 1982 and 1983, at that time, there were some colleagues, I was one of them, we spoke about the choice of an Islamic Republic in Lebanon. Let me put an end to this so that we don't continue to speak about it every week on the internet, on TV, they speak of it. But I'd like to remind them as well, also, amongst the Christian leaders, those who speak about one country, about a democratic country, those who speak about coexistence and civil peace and people living with one another, they spoke also about a Christian country, about division. They spoke about federalism at that time. Now they stopped. At the beginning, if we want to be frank, yes, at the beginning we spoke about an Islamic Republic in Lebanon. I was 23, 24, 25 years old that time. We were young. Now, of course, Hezbollah figures have grey hair a bit. But after that, we entered the Lebanese reality. We reevaluated the situation. We read the documents. Hezbollah, 20 years ago, ever since 20 years, its political language is very clear. And when I say political language, we're not afraid, we're not ashamed from anyone. These are our convictions. And we believe these convictions are the interests of our people in Lebanon, the interests of the Muslims from all different sects, and the interests of the Christians and the people of the country. So let's go back to the main issue. I wrote something which I wanted to speak about, which is related to the region, the people of the region, and the Islamic movements, and the challenges which they are facing as Islamic movements. However, as a result of the time constraints, and I have a few more points I want to speak about, I'll delay this. Let me go directly to speak of the issue related to Iran and the resistance and Syria. And if time remains, I want to say a few words about Lebanon. Although, if I don't have time for Lebanon, I'll delay it, because if we stay alive, and may you all stay alive, on the 16th of February, we have the commemoration of the martyrs, and I'll have time for another speech at that time. Now, after what was said by the Supreme Leader, Imam Khamenei, on Friday, Sayyid Khamenei said very frankly, he said that we, the Islamic Republic of Iran, we support the resistance movements in Lebanon and the resistance movements in Palestine. And we don't want anything in exchange for this support. We are doing our duty, our religious duty. Of course, with this clarity, I can say from the highest authority in the Islamic Republic, for the first time, we hear such a stance in this clarity. And I want to build on this to address issues which have been raised in Lebanon and in the region. I'd like to answer some questions. After what was said by Sayyid Ali Khamenei, yes. Now everybody else can speak on behalf of themselves. I want to speak about Hezbollah. First of all, yes, we receive support. We receive moral, political, and material support in all its forms from the Islamic Republic of Iran. We have been receiving this support ever since 1982. Previously, this was said incompletely. We didn't lie. We said half of it. We didn't say the rest. We said that there was moral, political support. When they spoke to us about financial and military support, we were silent. We didn't say yes or no, because we didn't want to corner our people out in Iran. But now, after the highest authority in Iran has said we're giving support, so let's be clear now. And this point is very important, because I want to speak about its effects, its repercussions. This support, which was given to us ever since the beginning, this is something which the Islamic Republic should be proud of. Because this resistance in Lebanon, which achieved the biggest and most important and most clear Arab victory against Israel on the 25th of May, the year 2000, this victory would not have been achieved were it not for this moral and material or financial support, Iranian support for the resistance movement in Lebanon. So listen to me very well. The first Arab clear victory without any conditions, without any games. This first victory was achieved with Iranian support. Of course, Syria also had a big role to play, but now I'm speaking about Iran. And the resistance movement, which also stood and achieved victory in the July 2006 war, it wouldn't have been able to stand and achieve victory were it not for this Iran support as well. The resistance movement in Palestine also, it can speak on its own account, it can speak for itself. Will it speak, will it not speak, it's their business. But I can say, yes, this is the truth. And the first repercussion or the first thing we can say is to express thanks and gratitude to the leadership of the Islamic Republic, express thanks and gratitude to Imam Khomeini, to Imam Khamenei, to the officials in Iran, and to the people of Iran, those who are paying a very high price for their stance in support of Palestine and in support of Lebanon. And now Iran, which is subject to sanctions and isolation, whose assets are being taken away, if it sells Palestine, everything will be solved. Now, is America's problem in the region, is it about democracy? As if we have democracy in other parts, in the other section. The problem with the problem of America, is it democracy? America's problem is two issues, Israel and the oil. Leave Israel alone and sell us your oil like we want, and we welcome you. We have no other problems. That's America. If the ruler wears religious clothing or anything else, that's no problem. What concerns America is politics. Where's your political stance? So we express our thanks to the leadership of the Islamic Republic and its officials and its government and its people. Because if we don't thank the people, we don't thank the Creator. And if we express thanks, this will continue. The good things will continue. Now, when it comes to those who don't express thanks, what does this lead to? This leads to loss, people being a state of loss. Also, we can say this perspective, let me clarify, when it comes to the financial material support, you know, time and again, the media, especially the Americans, and some media, some on the internet, and even some of the Lebanese media, which is against us, who don't see anything good in us, is this possible not to see anything good in us? Nothing at all? No, they've just closed it all. They don't see anything good in us. Time and again, they speak about the drug networks in Latin America, in America, in Eastern Europe, in Africa, somewhere else. They say Hezbollah is managing or controlling these networks, and they say these drug networks or drug cartels are financing Hezbollah's activities. Now, the Supreme Leader spoke about this, we denied, and I want to say as well, when it comes to drug trafficking, this is forbidden for us, number one. Number two, God has given us, God with the Islamic Republic of Iran, this has enabled us not to resort to money from anywhere else. We are rich, we are not poor, we don't need anything. We don't need drug trafficking. We don't need drug trafficking. And these are lies and fabrications. And number two, we don't need money laundering as well. Anyone who you accuse of being involved in money laundering, hold them accountable. We're not involved in money laundering. We don't facilitate. We don't accept this at all. I've told this to the people in the central bank and to the Lebanese government, the Lebanese officials. It's not even forbidden, it's not only forbidden religiously. And we don't even participate in what is allowed for religiously, like commerce or trade. We're not involved in commerce or trade inside Lebanon and outside Lebanon. There is no Lebanese person whom we have money with or whom we take revenues from at all, a Lebanese businessman. even inside Lebanon, yes, for a certain period, we did need money, and we had some projects. After our situation improved, we stopped these commerce projects. Now, very clearly, if anyone tells you that I have a project for Hezbollah, a business for Hezbollah, don't believe him. That's his. We have no business in Hezbollah, in the leadership of Hezbollah. We believe in any jihadist movement, any resistance movement, any political party movement, if they need to have...